So, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, are UNESCO artists for peace is going to be somewhat of a hard act to follow. That was a marvelous little interlude that we had. Let me just begin by telling you how honored and delighted I am to have the opportunity to address such a distinguished audience and to briefly give you some of our thoughts from UNESCO about the challenges and opportunities presented to us by the changing landscape of science. I will be brief and stay within my time. I know there's many distinguished speakers to follow. So the overview of the structure of my remarks is the following. Our take on what the changing landscape actually looks like, challenges about how we can do a better job in responding to Dr. Leshner's, one of his key points, most strategic directions of actions we can take, and also an open invitation for all in the hall to increasingly participate with UNESCO in some of the new directions we're taking. As the landscape of science is changing, UNESCO also has been changing rapidly in recent months. So what are the changes in the landscape of science? Well, as our Director General mentioned, we published the UNESCO Science Report in 2010. There's been a parallel and highly interesting complementary effort from the Royal Society that I believe Chris Llewellyn Smith is going to talk about. And clearly there are enormous changes in the morphology of international participation in science. Of course, the challenges facing the planet, the dramatically increasing urgency of these challenges was stressed by Professor Lee. But there are also changes in the practice of science and engineering, which are really, I think, important when addressing our future. So for those of you who haven't seen it, the UNESCO Science Report is available to you online. I'm only going to use one slide about the report, but I encourage those of you who haven't read it, to please take a look at it. And as our DG said, one of the key points is the emergence of new players, the more multipolar nature of international science, and the increasing prominence of international collaborations in the conduct of science. The challenges facing our planet are very well known to our audience, so I won't go into them in any detail, but there are the climate change and climate change-related issues. There are also the human-related issues of how do we provide for our population healthcare, food, energy, clean water, education, et cetera, particularly given the rapidly increasing populations. And as scientists, I don't believe we think enough about the implications and the opportunities for the world economic crisis. So that was pointed out by a number of speakers earlier this morning. So what about science itself? How is the practice of science evolving? I think all of us will be familiar with the increasingly interdisciplinary nature of the work that we do, the more of the team-based focus on the work, the blurring between what people thought of as pure science and applied science and engineering. Scientists are also increasingly embracing the responsibility of taking on the policy dimensions of our work and not sort of passing off the results and assuming somehow it's going to happen. One that I am particularly intrigued about, another change in the practice of science, has been described by this phrase, the fourth paradigm, in a book edited by Tony Hay, the head of the Microsoft Research, a part of Microsoft. And the fourth paradigm refers to the increasing prevalence of data-intensive science. The first paradigm being, of course, empirical science from time immemorial, basically, then theoretical science, then maybe 40 years or so of computational science, and now the science in which we are exploring immense data sets to discover truths. And it's really requires and may attract different kinds of people into the scientific enterprise. And one of the things that's very important for us in UNESCO is to make sure that as science changes, our work in capacity building throughout the world is capacity building towards the future rather than towards visions of science of the past. And then another very exciting ones are these emerging possibilities for citizen science. And with respect to environmental sciences and the nature reserves around the world, one can, for example, envision a very robust participation in science by hundreds of thousands of citizens enabled by very low cost technologies, e.g. cell phones. So what are the challenges for our communities in doing a better job in targeting our research to addressing these problems? Well, the overarching thing is people. Increasing the participation, increasing support in the whole enterprise of science and engineering, especially among our youth and with a focus of women on women and girls, is the key issue. Forging more effective alliances between international scientific communities, forging new kinds of funding models, as Professor Lee talked about, and I believe Dr. Leshner also talked about. The time is urgent right now for the international governmental organizations that fund science to help the scientific community in new models to more easily promote global alliances. The free flow of scientific information, access to data, and again, continuing to build capacity throughout the world. I mentioned especially the least developed countries, but capacity to do science in more creative ways and to target science more effectively to society is a capacity building need of all of our societies, including the most rich in scientific research. So strategic directions from the point of view of UNESCO, well, we believe that higher education is really a strategic sweet spot, because even though our universities are very slow to change, we have a lot more autonomy and a lot more possibility for new directions than other sectors of society. And so we're making a very major effort on transformation of research and science and engineering in the higher education sphere. Of course, alliances with industry are vital, indispensable in this matter. I mentioned the funding mechanisms already. International collaboration on policy instruments must also be promoted. And under the leadership of the director of our Division for Science Policy and Capacity Building, Professor Lydia Brito, who's here at this meeting, we've launched two new initiatives on, one is called Stick Up and one is called Go Spin, building international collaborations in science policy development. And I hope you'll talk to her if you're interested in participating in that. We've also launched a number of initiatives at UNESCO, including on biodiversity and ecosystem services and on engineering education. So the summary is that our relationship with society needs to be transformed dramatically, and it needs to be transformed rapidly, and we look forward to working with any of the audience in this forum in further collaborating with UNESCO. I must say that we do have one strategic asset that we also want to use more effectively as we move forward, and that is our sites around the world. We heard about the Biosphere Reserve there through the Nigeria Award. There are 580 biosphere reserves in 120 countries that we have, which are just incredible sites for us to work collaboratively on practical ways to approach sustainable development. Among the World Heritage Sites, there's about 700 that are designated for natural reason. And so we would very much look forward also to finding out how to better use that network for our scientific activities. So thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. I believe I've stayed within my 15 minutes, and I look forward to dialogue.